listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, October 14th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. I'm glad to be here.
Welcome to those joining us live as well as to those listening to the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief, and those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, on to tonight's topic, cult DNA with Dr. Doug Kelly, and welcome Dr. Kelly.
Hi everyone, good to be back with you again. Sorry about last week, we just didn't realize that the program would coincide with the vice presidential debate, so we didn't want to compete, so we canceled last week's show at the last minute. Sorry about that, but tonight I want to talk about cults, and let me give you a little forward on that. This has kind of been inspired by the news of late, you know, especially in the political arena. And of course, as many of you may know, I spent 40 years in a cult. And so when I left about 20 years ago, it became obvious that there's so many cults around. Of course, we probably all know that. But even when you've been in one and out of one, you can start to see the red flags for cults about in so many places. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But it got me thinking, you know, what is it about human psychology that causes people to leave their critical thinking at the door and follow a cult leader? You know, of course, I was born into the cult, so I didn't go in as an adult, but, you know, I was reared on it. I mean, I was indoctrinated from birth in this cult, Jehovah's Witnesses. And I remember back in those days, you know, when I would talk to people who would say, you're a cult. No, we're not a cult because we don't follow a human leader. Well, that doesn't mean anything. We thought it did. And a lot of cults do have human leaders, but that's not the only criteria. But it got me thinking, just I don't understand why so many people will adamantly defend their belief system in the face of facts to the contrary. And so, you know, I've always been interested in human psychology, which is why we have the schools and the programs and so forth. So I want to talk tonight about this, and I'm going to cover about 4 broad sections: characteristics of cults, why people join cults, why people remain in cults, and how to know if you're in a cult or how to remain free of cults. So we'll start with characteristics of cults. A cult can be religious or non-religious, political, corporation, street gangs, militias, self-help groups, inner circles, and even more. It's basically a social thing almost. You know, they're high control groups. And that's one of the marked features of a cult. They're high control groups. They try to control everything. They're led often by a narcissistic and charismatic leader who demands strict obedience. And notice I didn't say harsh. You know, the leaders are not necessarily outwardly harsh or authoritarian, but they are harsh and authoritarian. It's just that it's covered up. They're often very charismatic. Cults seek to control every aspect of their members' lives, including what to think, what to believe, financial matters, sexual matters, personal decisions, living arrangements, and the list goes on from there, too. The thing about cults is that they rob members of their self-identity and their individualism. The members are required to essentially don on the identity of their leader. And so now you don't have a group of individuals per se, but you have almost a hive mind, to quote the Borg from Star Trek. They don't allow internal disagreement, and they hate external scrutiny. Members usually have an us versus them mentality because, you know, often they feel that they're the chosen ones of some sort for some reason. It's usually the thing. And I'll get into a little bit more on that a little bit later. Cults discourage critical thinking and any outside education that might undermine the cult's strength. When I was a witness, you know, they strongly discouraged college education. Why? Well, that'll come up again, too. But in a nutshell, the more educated you are, the least likely you're going to be to join a cult or to remain in a cult. Doesn't mean that they're not educated people in them. It just means it's a little less likely. So they didn't want us to figure out that everything we were taught was, you know, smelly, steamy BS. So because they do this, they discourage critical thinking. It causes the members to be stunted in emotional, educational, and intellectual growth. Cults separate their members from others. They alienate people from friends and family. I mean, this is also true with Jehovah's Witnesses. If you don't measure up, if you don't believe like they do, you either disassociate yourself from them or they excommunicate you. They call it disfellowshipping. But in either case, you are now as dead to anybody else who's still a member. So if you have family members who are still members of the cult, they will shun you. They will not talk to you. They will turn away from you. They disown you, essentially. If you have friends, doesn't matter how long you've been friends, they do the same thing. You're shunned. You're dead to them. You're disowned. And if you're in a grocery store and you happen to cross paths with them, they will just look away. You can say hi all you want. They will not respond. They'll just keep on going as if you're not even there. So this is one of the ways that they alienate people. That's one of the ways, not all of them. I mean, think about this. There have been parents who have been alienated from their grown children and their grandchildren. They never get to talk with their grandchildren or see their grandchildren anymore because essentially the grandparents are dead because they left the religion. Some cults keep their members so busy with cult-related activities that the members simply don't have the time to think for themselves. And this was also true with Jehovah's Witnesses. At the time I was a witness, there were 5 meetings a week. And then there's personal study, personal Bible study. Then there's family Bible study. And then there's, you know, going out in the door-to-door work, you know, proselytizing, which, contrary to what anybody might say, everybody hates it. Next item. Cults will use coercion, guilt, and shame to keep their members in line. They also use ultra-frequent repetition of the group's values and beliefs in an almost hypnotic manner. This is not all of them, but a lot of them do. This was true with Jehovah's Witnesses. You go to those meetings and you hear the same, essentially, you hear the same things over and over and over and over again. Oh, there's a slightly new spin on it every time, but it's essentially the same stuff. And that monotony is like a hypnotic effect. It has a hypnotic effect. And so you get indoctrinated constantly from that. They use direct and indirect measures to control the group. The cult leaders will play on human emotions and psychology, to persuade, manipulate, and control their members. And one of the biggest thing, the reasons why people stay and remain is them esteem. And you've heard me talk about that many times if you've heard any of our previous programs. Self-esteem is when you have, you esteem yourself. You are not affected by what other people think of you. Them esteem means you only feel good about yourself when other people accept you. So your validation is external. Then when self-esteem is internal, not external. Another thing that comes into play on the characteristics of cults and why the members do the thing they do, this is kind of leaking over into another couple of sections, but I didn't know where to stick it, so I'm putting it here. Maybe you've heard of the Milgram experiment, M-I-L-G-R-A-M experiment, Stanley Milgram, that happened in the early 60s and through that decade. And if you haven't, look it up because it's very interesting. You know, the question is, why would these cult members do these heinous things? You know, like Hitler, how is it that so many people did his bidding? And that, this is something that's inherent to any cult. They'll do things you wouldn't think normal people would do. Well, the Milgram experiment, basically, and I'm just going to be very brief with it here, he set up an experiment. There were three participants in this experiment. There was the professor, if you will, the experimenter, they called him, but he was the professor who was an authority. He was conducting this experiment. Then they had two other people. One of those other people were in on the experiment. The other person was just somebody they got, you know, paid $4 an hour to come and help them with this experiment. So the person would sit at a machine with a bunch of buttons on it, and they were told that the other person was in the other room, the co-conspirator was in the other room. They called that person the learner. And then the teacher was the guy or the gal who was sitting at the machine. And the person, the experimenter, would then offer some word pairs, several different word pairs to the learner in the other room through a intercom. And the other person had to get them right. They had to match up the word pairs. And if they didn't, then the experimenter, under the supervision of the, the experimenter was the professor. Let me just call him the professor, okay, the guy doing the experiment, overseeing it all. The teacher was a guy at the machine. So the teacher would offer the word pairs, and the learner would say them back. If the learner got any of them wrong, then the teacher would push a button on this machine and deliver a small electrical voltage. And the more often they got the answers wrong, the higher the voltage went. And it went from, you know, like 15 volts up to 450 and higher volts. Now, the learner was never really electrocuted or never received any punishment, but they would act like they did. And so because the teacher pushing the buttons and delivering these shocks could not see them, they didn't know. And they would hear the groans and the cries from when they were getting shocked. And a lot of people would say, you know, I can't do this. And the professor overseeing all this would say, please continue. And he would use words like that, please continue. The experiment must go on. And they would keep on going. And they would keep delivering. One person even claimed, you know, the learner who was in on it, claimed, I have a heart condition. Oh, and then, you know, the higher the voltage got, you know, oh, my heart, I can feel it. And the people at the machine were stressing for sure, but they kept on going. They didn't just say, you know what, this is baloney. No, I'm not going to hurt another person. They didn't do that. Well, most of them didn't. 65% of the subjects in this experiment went all the way to the maximum voltage. Some of them, you know, because the professor kept telling them, no, it's got to go on, keep doing it. It's painful, but it's not going to hurt them. Keep going. And they did. And you wonder, and of course they've analyzed this to death, it's because of this whole them esteem thing, that there's somebody who's perceived as an authority, that was the professor, and they didn't want to, you know, they assumed that this professor knew what he was doing, like cult members will assume that the leaders know what they're doing, and they trust in that, and they will, and these people who were pushing the buttons on this machine to deliver these shocks, they didn't want to, but they kept going with it because they didn't want to upset the status quo. They didn't, you know, it was them esteem. I want to make this successful, and on and on. It's a fascinating thing. Well, this Milgram experiment also is connected in some ways to the Stockholm Syndrome. Maybe you've heard of that. You know, back in what was in the 70s, and they robbed a bank, a bunch of these people, and got, you know, stuck in there with hostages, and the hostages began over time starting to identify with the criminals, with the bank robbers. In fact, one of them wanted to marry one of them later on. And that's because the hostages had a fear of survival, or perceived fear of survival, or personal safety, you know, and this can also be stated as survival of beliefs. You know, I've said it many times, belief is arguably the most powerful and potent force in the universe. It's why we are who we are, and where we are where we are. It's why it's the basis for every war that's ever occurred, belief. And so the Stockholm Syndrome can enter in when you feel that your beliefs, right or wrong, are being attacked. And that's why so many people will stay, is because they fight for those beliefs. So these are some of the characteristics of cults and why people are in them. Any comments from you, Dr. Vicky or Michael?
Well, I sure do.
No kidding.
Shocking. Well, you know, there are some people in our audience who are not aware. My son was seduced away by evangelists when he was 15. And I don't need to tell you how sick I was over all of it. And I fought them. I fought the school. I fought because I was a pagan. And they all thought they were doing my son a favor. When I took this even to the police force, and of course up here in Canada, they don't determine a cult as a cult unless you can't leave. And that's legally speaking. So we can know, and everything that you've described, oh, dead on, Dr. Kelly. The thing is, legally, you can't seek help. because there's a different legal definition. And I was hooped. There was nothing I could do. So the evangelist stole my son. And it started with things like a Tuesday night Bible study with free burgers, you know, at McDonald's. And then going to visit with his friend. Lo and behold, I didn't know they were going to church. And all the other getaways, and it became very seductive, and of course he turned on me. So needless to say, you know, when he did turn 18, finished school, I said, you got to leave. And I actually, now that was 20 years ago, believe it or not, just about 20 years ago, and I have not even spoken with my son in over 10 years. He has two boys now, married with two boys. I'm not allowed to meet them. He just doesn't like me. See? And I dared to challenge everything that he believed in, and he took that personally. You know, he didn't see that he was finding his own social network and club that stroked his emotions, gave him a car to drive when he wanted, took him to parties. And there wasn't a kid, you know, raised by any of these so-called elders that wasn't screwed up on drugs, pregnant at 14. It was crazy. So, I mean, and they can be dysfunctional, and that's okay. And I'd already raised two daughters, and functional. But that doesn't mean anything, because it's the belief system that goes against. So anytime somebody professes to know what they're talking about and what's good for other people is of a cult mind. And unfortunately, when a system is built on a Christianized philosophy, and that's kind of the, you know, it's the root. And it's you know, fractured into all kinds of, you know, Christianized views and religions, including the Witnesses, the Mormons, you know, evangelists. I mean, the list is very long. It's still cultish. And I mean, I was raised in that kind of environment, so I knew it well, but I got kicked out of teaching Sunday school when I was 14 because I dared to ask who said Jesus looked that way. So, you know, when you have a questioning mind and You know, this is a really touchy thing, and it's so important, this discussion, Dr. Kelly, because to recognize it. And if you see anybody in your family, catch it early, quickly, you know, to have really important discussions, like have that critical thinking discussion. And no matter how young or old, I know with two grandchildren here, their parents are, oh man, they're so awesome. And we live in a very Christianized community, but we celebrate Yuletide, not Christmas. And they're okay with it because we encourage questioning and that they can, you know, be who they are and not feel ashamed that we don't celebrate Christmas. You know, no, we're different and that's good. You see, so it's a very tight line to walk when you're, you know, living in certain communities that have so much influence and they so believe what they say that I call it a mental illness myself. That's what I call it. And because when you can't have an open, critical thinking mind, there's a short circuit in the brain. That's my feeling about it. But, of course, I'm a little biased now after all these years. No, that's my speech, Dr. Kelly.
Well, yeah, and seeing that just underscores everything I was talking about, you know, how grandparents can't see their grandkids and grandkids can't see their grandparents because they divide and alienate people. In fact, a friend of mine who left said, you can join, but you can never leave intact, you know, without damages. Michael, did you have any comments you wanted to make before I continue?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, all the good points have really been said, but it's just about that that groupthink and the danger of not employing your critical thinking, thinking for yourself, and it can be, you know, it can be susceptible. You know, people are susceptible to falling into groupthink, especially when, you know, your entire peer network, your entire social group, your family, all are all members of this cult. It's, you know, it's hard to go against the grain sometimes. And so I can understand how people can fall into them, but it's a sad thing, especially when you're born into it. But it's not impossible to gain that level of awareness to, you know, explore the world around you and to grow intellectually to break out of it. But, you know, and there have been some really, you know, stark examples of the dangers of cult mentality and people that put their faith into a charismatic leader like Jonestown is a famous example, and just people, you know, losing their ability to think critically and to think independently and to just go along with this, and to it leads to their own suicide. It goes against all reason, and it's a sad thing, but, you know, it doesn't have to be. We employ individual thought, and we employ critical thinking, and we can look for the red flags and danger signs.
You know, Michael's an example, a sterling example of what happens, the fallout to this stuff. Because 20 years ago, 20 or so years ago, when I left, yeah, I lost all my family, because all my family were witnesses. I lost them all. I had not been in contact with any of them for these 20 years. And not only that, all the friends I'd known for decades, gone out of my life. Haven't talked to him, haven't seen him for years, all this time, for 20 years. Well, Michael was 12 at the time. And I mean, that's been a long time. This has been 22 years ago. Anyway, you know, he's 12. And we leave, you know, and basically all his friends were gone too, and people he had known and grown up with, and family members. Yeah, since he was never a baptized witness, he was, you know, technically it was okay for them to talk to him because he hadn't yet gotten baptized. He was too young. And so he lost out on a lot of family time and cousins and things like that. So they alienate people. They hurt people. So let's move on with the next section, was why do people join cults? Well, God knows. Okay, that's it for that section.
Only the one true God knows.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, cults prey on people who are largely, okay, nothing's ever fast and hard, but generally speaking, cults prey on people who are uneducated, poor, or have many problems in their lives and are looking for answers, really. Now, I know everybody's looking for answers, but especially they prey on these people because they're the easiest ones to convert. Because when you're down and out, you're looking for any kind of a handout. You're looking for anything that's going to get you out of that pit. And that's the ones who are down on their luck. And it also satisfies some need, yearning in the individual, such as loneliness or meaning. You know, a lot of times the cults will love bomb you when you first go, that kind of a thing. It fulfills the human need to belong to a group of like-minded individuals serving a higher or bigger purpose. Now, again, back to the social aspects. People join cults because they're looking for love and acceptance and because they want answers to personal problems in their lives. People endure inappropriate treatment in order to attain a promised reward. So, you know, they'll go into this thing because they see something or they're conned, essentially, into believing that being part of this is going to get them what they want. And over time, they're brainwashed. That's exactly what happens. They're brainwashed. So why do people remain in cults then? Well, some of the reasons I just outlined are reasons why they remain in them. But if you think about it, here are 3 points from my 14 traits of human nature that I teach at our schools. At IMHS, it's in course M3. At TFU, it's in course G140 on metaphysical psychology. But point number 11 is the need to be right. This is generally unhealthy, an unhealthy trait. And it has to do with cognitive dissonance, which you'll hear a lot in connection with cult members. Cognitive dissonance is simply denial with secondary gains. And so they will deny the facts that you present to them that absolutely prove that their way of believing is wrong. They will absolutely fight it. No, that's not true. It's not true. Not true. Because they're in denial with secondary gains. They're denying it because they have secondary gains. If they accept it, then what do they stand to lose? All their friends or family members or whoever else is in the cult, their good standing in the cult, their image, remember them esteem? It's all based on them esteem. Point number 12 in these 14 traits, the need to blame, which again is generally unhealthy. So you'll see cult members blaming others for their predicament. Or for, you know, if anything comes to the cult, they blame everybody else other than what the cult's doing. Point number 13 of these 14 traits, the need for secrets and exclusivity. That's generally unhealthy. These are human needs. The need for secrets and exclusivity. Think about the gossip. Have you ever known a gossip? Maybe at work, there's the gossip. Guess what I know? And, you know, they have secrets. They know secrets. And so other people want to know these secrets because that's part of human nature too, you know. It's this tendency toward exclusivity, which is the basis for racism, intolerance, and cliques, gossip, as I mentioned. So they're part of this chosen organization. And if it's religious, it's, you know, they're God's chosen organization. If it's political, well, they're part of the only right, you know, organization that there is. You know, that's the right party. You know, that's the only one that they can see. And so these are some reasons why people remain in cults. I'm going to pause again here to see if Dr. Hunter or Michael has any comments they want to make.
Well, there's always something in it for them.
Oh, yeah.
That's all. You know, that's the thing.
Secondary gains.
And all I know is that for the first while, my son, you know, at a very touchy time in a young growing man's life, he had some good buddies, he got burgers, could go away to camp. You know, that's very seductive.
Yeah. Michael, any comments?
It is very seductive to have somebody that offers you an easy path, all the answers, and it gives you kind of a warm feeling that there are no more questions, but they're, you know, anybody that tells you they have all the answers, it's a dangerous thing. Because there are certain things.
I should have known that with my ex-husbands.
All right.
That's true.
So, how do you know if you are in a cult, or how do you remain free of cults? Kind of the same thing, only different. All right. First thing, please think for yourself. Think for yourself. Use critical thinking skills. Use common sense. Think for yourself. You know, if you hear something negative about your organization, do your due diligence. Do your research. Find out whether it's true or not. That's the important thing. Is it true or not? If it's not true, fine. If it is true, then, you know, you might need to rethink your thinking, to put it one way. Here's another point. Believing in something should not come at the cost of your family and friends. If somebody's trying to get you to sacrifice your relationships or your morals for the, quote, greater good, then they are trying to exploit you to their own ends. So don't sacrifice your friends and family to any, you know, any ideology. You know, obviously, you know, and I have to qualify this a little bit, and because I've taught this too, you know, sometimes our family and friends are toxic and we wouldn't want to be in a relationship with them, but it has nothing to do with their beliefs per se. It's because they're toxic individuals. Maybe that they're addicts or alcoholics or whatever, and we just, they cause more trouble than they don't. So, you know, that's that. But believing in something should not cost you your friends and family. And I want to also go through a fantastic way of determining not only whether you're in a cult or but also how to remain free of cults. And if you're on the broadcast page, it's basically this 9 principles of belief. You know, and I want to go through, because if you follow these, it's going to keep you clear. It's going to keep you safe. And it's not rocket science either. But if you scroll down on your page, if you're on the broadcast page, or you can find these at metaphysicalhumanism.org, you can find our 9 principles of belief. You know, but basically, the first one is do no harm, do right. You know, if we just did that one, we would stay free of cults. We would not be a part of a cult. Do no harm, do right. You might be with a group of people that does no harm, but yet they're still a cult. So the right thing to do is the right thing. Do right. You know, don't harm people and do the right thing. The next one, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. That means trust your gut. Trust yourself. You know, what is your gut telling you? You know, so a lot of times we'll have that cognitive dissonance where somewhere deep inside we know that something's amiss here. And we maybe haven't quite identified it yet. That means you need to do research. That's one of the things the witnesses really, they said, don't do it. Don't go looking. Don't talk to apostates. Don't talk to unbelievers or you know, members who have left, because they will basically ruin your spirituality. They will take you away from God, and that's what Satan wants. See, there's more of that coercion. And so we need to listen to us. We need to be our own guru, our own counselor, and listen to what our gut's telling us. The third one, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. You know, that's, follow that one. Number 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. If a group you're in somehow believes that they are the one, the only one, maybe they're a religion, maybe they're God's chosen ones, or maybe it's a corporation or a political party or whatever, if they're the only one, and if you're not part of them, you're basically dead, in whatever way you want to think of that, you know, then there's a problem. That's a red flag, because we're all equal. It does not matter what your heritage is, or your skin color is, or your eye color, or your hair color. It does not matter how tall or short you are, how thin or wide you are. None of that matters. People are people, and we are all inherently equal and worthy. And we have to deal with racism all the time now, especially in the last 4 years, you know. And I thought we'd had that problem licked for the most part in the 60s, but no, here it comes and rears its ugly head again. We have to take a stand and make sure that we do not discriminate, that we hold everybody as equals, and cherish that, because we are. It doesn't matter your color. I don't know why people do that. Anyway, we are all equal. Number 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. This is another big one. Self-acceptance. If you accept yourself as you are, warts and all, Shakespeare said, if you accept yourself, you're going to accept others. And the next one, the next big one here in sequence, in my own mind here, is respect for free will. If you respect other people's free will, that means you're not trying to change or control them. So if your group is involved in changing or trying to control you or other people to get them in, there's a red flag. The key here, this is the life leadership paragon, folks, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will, and this creates self-completeness. We need to stand on our own two feet, know who we are and why we are who we are. This is the life leadership paragon. This is what this church and every course we have is based on. And so the first thing is the idea behind this life leadership paragon is to bring it in balance, to balance out your life leadership paragon. That means accept yourself. That's the first place to start. Build your self-esteem. Understand that you are worthy and you're perfect just the way you are. The next one is to respect others. Don't try to change them or control them. And that goes for you, parents with adult children. Stop trying to control your adult children. You had your chance. It's over. Stop doing it. Once you accept yourself and once you respect other people's free will, self-responsibility falls into place. Now, you're taking responsibility only for yourself and not assuming responsibility for another adult, which is immoral. And once you've got that balance, then guess what? Self-completeness is the result. That means you're complete within yourself. You know who you are, why you are who you are. You don't need somebody, something, some anything to complete you because you're already complete within yourself. Number 8, metaphysical education, practical life skills empower the human spirit, enhance the human condition. This is what we need. This is what we're doing tonight. Education. People need education. They didn't learn the life skills that none of us did that we needed in school. That's why we teach such fantastic and masterful life skills, communication skills, critical thinking skills, relationship skills, because that is part of evolving. Of growing. That's what it's all about. Number 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So through education, through growth and evolution, we become more enlightened and more aware. That's how we can remain free of a cult or a cult mentality. Now, some people perhaps have asked, is metaphysical humanism a cult? You know, the church I founded. I am its leader. I did the thing 10 years ago. So is metaphysical humanism a cult? Well, the short answer is absolutely not. And I'll tell you why. My goal is to teach people the skills they need so they don't need me. I would make the worst cult leader in the world. Because that's not what cult leaders do. They create a dependence on them. I'm trying to teach people that they don't need me, but to give them the skills that they need to get through life successfully. You know, I know, I lived in a cult for 40 years. I know how to start one. I know how to do a cult. And I could so easily do one. And frankly, this church would be far, 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 far bigger if I did, because I'm playing on human psychology. And people's lack of critical thinking, if I were to do that. So since I know how to do it, I also know how not to do it. And I would never do that. I want people to think for themselves, to stand on their own two feet. You know, I don't want to be their guru, because we should all be our own guru. And I hope that makes sense. So hopefully these points on cults have made a difference and will help you to either get out of one or to remain free of them. And take these things and think about them in light of your own life, your religious standing or your political standing or whatever. Make sure that you're doing no harm and you're doing right. Any comments, Dr. Hunter or Michael?
Well, you know, I think a few years ago on this program I shared this story, but if you don't mind indulging me for a minute, when my oldest daughter was in high school, she befriended a group of Baha'i. And which is fine. She went to a few of their firesides, and I said, just remember, they're a cult. She said, no, they're not. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, just check it out and be friends, but they want you to join. And she said, but that's not what my friends would do. I said, okay. So what I did is I gave her a few pointers of, she felt that she was participating in their discussions, but I would say, yeah, but you're on their turf. So one day she came home and she started to tell me about, you know, what it's about. And I said, oh, Baha'u'llah, who taught Shoghi Effendi. And she said, well, how do you know that? And I said, well, I studied that. Oh, why didn't you tell me? I said, you didn't ask. You know, so if you want to know stuff, just ask me. But one day she said, I said, why don't you invite them over here and we'll teach them some of what we do, like our ceremonies. And I live a very indigenous way of life and largely Scandinavian. So, you know, it's invite them over. Well, the next day she said, they're not interested in coming over. You're right, Mom. They only wanted me to join them. So it was taking those, you know, and this happened over many weeks. I've got to tell you, patience on my part. But it's to kind of share with her thoughts and to be able to observe. And again, not trying to infringe on her free will, but to coach it from the sidelines, giving questions to ask. And if that helps anybody else, I'm really glad. So, you know, and if anybody out there is dealing with their children or family members who are tempted by cults or cult members, please contact Dr. Kelly or myself. I did put my email up in the chat there a while ago. But contact us and we'll be glad to maybe coach you from the sidelines and help out. So I think it's card pulling time. We've really enjoyed this, Dr. Kelly. Thanks. This is such an important discussion.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody tuning into it and those listening to the archive too. I hope that you benefited from this discussion. So anyway, I hope everyone is safe and stays safe from the pandemic stuff, and we'll see you the first of next month again. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you,
Dr. Kelly.
Yeah, it has been. Has been a fascinating topic tonight. I mean, it's something that just kind of permeates human history, no matter how far back you go. And knowing human history, we're going to see evidence of these cult groups. And it seems to be something that, until we socially evolve to another plane, it's going to be something that we have to constantly be vigilant about and try to avoid. But it is that time. I think we're going to try to sneak in a few inner oracle cards as well as tarot cards for this evening.
Yeah, I know we're over our time. If nobody in our audience minds, we don't mind, do we, Michael?
Oh, I don't mind at all. Not at all.
Well, I think we have Bridget up first, so let's go there. Did I miss anybody before Bridget? I'm trying to write things down.
Nope. That's what I have as well, so I think we're right on track. So,
okay.
All right.
What do you got for Bridget?
Ah, good one for tonight's topic, too, and thinking for yourself. It's Truth, number 24.
I love it.
There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet, the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction.
That's a good one. So I just want to inject, for those who are new in our chat and in our archives, Michael selects from the Inner Oracle self-discovery cards built by Dr. Kelly, and I choose a tarot in support of that card for whatever the message might be for the individual. Sometimes we can all relate, though. So for you, Bridget, you got Truth from Michael, and I've got Judgment from the tarot. Of course, it's in the major arcana portion of the tarot. And speaking your truth, Judgment is declaration, in a way, an announcement, something coming, but just remember to speak your truth. I mean, Dr. Kelly was saying that. And I think sometimes, though, we have to be delicate. We can't always, you know, how do you say that, bull in the china shop? But being fair to yourself and just staying in line with what you believe. So I also get, in support of that, that you're ready to take yourself to the world in a new way. So I think you're absolutely ready. So that's that little extra message I get in my brain, you know, when we're doing these cards. So hope that makes sense to you. Fran is up next, Michael. What do you got for Fran?
All right. I have positive consciousness, number 13. Let's see. It is our soul's natural inclination to be positive. Therefore, positive consciousness transcends positive thinking. As human beings, we can find ourselves with the need to filter negativities and ill will. Be at peace with your natural self and continue displaying goodwill towards others. Don't hate or hold hatred in your heart. Maintain your positive attitude even in the face of obstacles and discouragements, for they are temporary.
You know, Fran, in support of positive consciousness and what Michael's just said, I get the Five of Spades, the Five of Swords in tarot language. And so if there is some difficulty, you're coming out on top here, and keeping that positive edge despite a challenge. You might be challenged from an outside source. And so I'm saying here, you're going to come out on top. So hang in there. Again, I want to say be true to you. You know to do that. I don't think you need reminding, but it's just in support of being challenged. So basically a victory after feeling like a little bit of stress. So you're on the right side, though. There you go. Yes, Bridget's asking a question. Could that be about a truth coming from someone else? Yes, absolutely. So yeah, it can certainly be seen that way, too. So, Ione, I think. I hope we are pronouncing your name right, so we're going to go with it. Ione is next, Michael. What are you pulling for, Ione?
I have number 37, groundedness.
Oh.
All right. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. Have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found.
Well, Ione, thank you for saying that in the chat, how to pronounce your name. We appreciate that. You know, in groundedness, Michael had just said suspending judgment, which is really important because your support card here is the Four of Spades. Now, the Four of Swords basically means repose, holding back, taking time out, and knowing that there's more information coming, and sometimes it's just important to rest. So that's what I'm going to go with here for you, Ione, is to take a breath. And don't be in a rush. Don't think that you need to make a decision today. And even if you feel like there's a pressing decision, take that 5 minutes, take that week, you know, take whatever you need in order to let it simmer and new information come to you in support of making a good decision. So I'd say you're on a bit of a timeout, suspending judgment. Key words for you. So whatever's going on in your life, I hope that also makes sense. So, okay, Wendy is next, Michael.
And Wendy, let's see. I have wild card number 5. Don't hate. Now that's ringing a bell. Have we pulled that one for Wendy recently? Do you recall?
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, let's see.
Go with it.
A low energy signature refuses to learn more in order to better accept and understand others. Hate grows in this low frequency. The result is fear, demonstrated as the need to criticize and control others. This is how wars begin, whether it's in relationships, within families, or between countries. Understanding does not mean one has to agree. It means rising above the low frequency to do no harm, do right to self and others.
Well, Wendy said yes in the chat, Michael. We'd pulled it before. I think, and in support of that, it's the Jack of Clubs. And in this case, Wendy, the Jack of Wands, I think it was, she said, I'm not sure why I keep getting this card. I need to figure it out. Well, I think in this, it's your one to bring change in your environment. And it's very difficult to not feel PO'd at times, you know, and frustrated or a little short-fused or do that facepalm, you know, to say, oh, yikes. It's, you know, it's just one of those things. So you're bringing change and moderate your frustration. Have something in your head that sings a song or thinks of a nice color, you know, and so, you know, that's what I think this is saying. And by the way, I love your new posts on food on Facebook. It's like, yo. So if I, you know, you can put your Facebook link in the chat, Wendy, if you don't mind other people following you, because it's like, holy, Wendy is some kind of cook. But her day job, this is, I'm talking about your day job, Wendy. So it's just hang in there. You're a game changer. You're bringing new energy to your environment. That's what it is. Audra is
all right.
Next.
Let's see what we have for Audra.
Yeah.
Ah, great card. Number 30, greatness to deliver. Every human being is born with greatness to deliver. Greatness embodies unique self-actualization and self-completeness and does not settle for mediocrity. Greatness goes above and beyond what is common and aspires to nobility of character. Greatness is being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Remind yourself with the question, what do I need to reawaken in me in order to deliver my greatness? Remember, you are valued. Delivering your greatness is making a difference in the world.
Ooh, Audrey, I think you're on to something, because I pulled the Chariot. Now, simply put, the Chariot, it's someone who's moving forward, but with good balance of negative and positive, right? You've think of a team of horses, man, and you're driving that cart, and you've got this. So, I think what's happened in the last, I'm going to go with the last few months, especially. I feel like a calm in you, a feeling very centered, or certainly more centered than you have in a long time, and you're moving forward now. Like again, self-esteem. Self-certainty, and you're finding your way. So there's a good momentum taking place. So it says keep going exactly the way you are, and don't question so much of yourself, if I can throw that in. So, all right, we have Shirley next. Thanks for the big crowd here today. It's great, you guys. Glad to see everybody here.
Yeah, we've had a nice, lively chat tonight, too, so it's always a good time. All right, and Dr. Shirley, I have number 44, attitude and disposition. Let's see.
I need that one sometimes.
Oh, don't we all? Enthusiasm and or an agreeable disposition, along with good manners, assures individual happiness that inevitably influences others. Drawing this card may indicate a time to review a change in attitude regarding someone or something in your life. This can be positive or negative. Be proactive. Ask yourself, how hard can it be? A can-do attitude makes it happen.
Whoa, surely I got the Ten of Diamonds. So the Ten of Pentacles, marketplace. Think about value for value, stepping into the world. And I see a generating of funds here. So attitude and disposition, you know, again, projecting, but putting your energy behind it and that can-do attitude. Because I feel like you're on a new roll. So you're entering a new marketplace, and I feel really excited for you. Things are going to get better for you, especially in the next month. Okay, that just rolled off my tongue unexpectedly, so I'll go with it. There you
all
go.
All right.
For sure.
You have to go with your intuition.
Absolutely. Dr. Edwards next.
All right, Dr. Edward. I have number 31, sacred obligations.
All right.
A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good of all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, pay it forward, uphold individual value, value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
Whoa, Edward, you know, I pulled the Five of Diamonds and I said, well, what is that with sacred obligations? And so I pulled another one for you, and it's the Five of Clubs. So the Five of Pentacles and the Five of Wands, you know, every card has its equal and opposite, negative, positive. I know some people read cards upside down. I don't do that. To me, everything has its own energy that should speak to you. So this is saying to me that people could be tugging at you. They could be tugging at your energy. They could be tugging at your good vibe or what you're doing. And the thing is, you can't put yourself on pause as you're moving forward. In other words, don't let other people interrupt your flow. That's what I want to say. And although kind of like victory is assured, it can feel like a little bit abrasive, because it's like, I really feel like you're moving forward, you're thinking about things, and there could be others saying, yeah, but what about me? And what about over here? Mm-hmm. And you can have those discussions, but it ought not to inhibit your momentum. So, and that's why I think that it might be a little taking of inventory, but your sacred obligation primarily is to yourself. So, it's always that way. So.
All right.
But thanks for some of the feedback, Bridget and Shirley, and you know a number of others in here. Thanks for that. It's always
happened. Mm. It's nice to hear when things connect, and you know there is a kind of, it's weird how sometimes things come up and you hear what you need to hear when you need to hear it. And frankly, sometimes that's a card pulled for somebody else, and I'll just think to myself, wow, I really needed to hear that right now.
Well, Dr. Edward said he's had that happen a lot in the past, and so we appreciate that. Thanks for sharing that. And we can all do well with a little reminder of these things, Michael. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
What a night. I mean, we've got a full hour. I'm so glad to have been here to share the hour.
Yeah.
And a good conversation with Dr. Kelly and good participation in the chat. Glad to draw some cards. Whew, how are we going to top this one, Michael?
Oh, I think we're going to have to come up with something really special for next week.
I think so.
I'm pretty sure we're going to think of it probably like Tuesday night or Wednesday morning before we go on.
Probably. Which brings us tonight. Anybody have any topics, ideas, anything that you want to talk about, please shoot us an email. If we need to do some research, you can submit some information if you want us to talk about it, but please, you know, otherwise we might just do another wing at night and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about in the chat that night.
So, and sometimes those are the most, all right, time travel, that's a good one.
Okay, time travel it is.
All right. Wendy was must have been talking with her dog Ghost, who jumped up on her lap, and they came up with a great idea.
There you go.
But no, it's we're going to have some interesting discussions coming up throughout the month, and you know it's going to be a stressful one. So join us to get together with people who are like-minded in a pursuit of curiosity, in a pursuit of the world, unwind a little bit, and you know I'm looking forward to it next week. So thank you everybody for joining us, and thank you, Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, Michael.
Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night, everybody.